Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Okay, welcome to New York Liberty Alliance. Well, actually, Liberty Alliance. We changed the name from New York Liberty Alliance to just Liberty Alliance here because we're talking to people not just in New York, but people outside of the state, and we're getting people involved. A couple of things. First, I'd like to request that everybody that comes to an understanding and starts to realize what it is we're doing and what the value of what we're doing here and how important it is, that they should go out and start bringing other people to our meetings. So hopefully next Monday, we will be having a meeting every single Monday, unless we're traveling the state giving a presentation, we will be here, and we'll let everybody know if we're not going to be here. But anyway, we'll be here every Monday, and these conversations are recorded. Last week, our conversation was recorded. It was our first program. This is our second program. This is being recorded. We do put a label on it. Last week, it was pretty much given information about what we're all about, what we're doing. Tonight, it's going to be in on really how to think free. We're going to be focusing in on the 14th Amendment. Next week, it'll be another subject. And we'll probably spend maybe 15 or 20 minutes or maybe less with each subject, and then we'll open up the phones for conversation, questions, and answers. In the near future, we'll start getting, we'll have guests who'll come on and be able to, someone who's going to give us some good information concerning what we're doing, either the common law or the political process, and you'll be able to ask that individual questions. But right now, again, we're kind of subject-focused, and tonight is on the 14th Amendment. So let's get started on that. Let me see where we started. I got some notes here. Okay. The 14th Amendment. Let me read the 14th Amendment to you. The 14th Amendment was ratified in 1868. And the 14th Amendment created the U.S. citizen. And the big question comes to play is if they just created the U.S. citizen in 1868, what will we, the 70, 80, the 80 or 90 years before that? What were we all that time? Well, actually, the answer to that question is we were the people. This is a play on words. And what we have discovered is the fraud that's being pulled over the eyes of the American people is repeated in every aspect of our government and the political process, the judicial process, all of it, whether it's in the legislative system, whether it's on the county level, the town level, or the state level, or even the federal level. It doesn't matter. It's the same fraud every time. It's just the same game. And once you figure it out, you start to see it, and now we can get beyond it. Now we can take control of it. You know, you have to understand your enemy if you're going to be able to take back that which they've stolen from you. So let's read the 14th Amendment, and we'll see some of the problems here. The 14th Amendment, Article 1, Section 1 says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protections of the laws. Now, the first problem here, the first problem we saw is what were people before the 14th Amendment? There had to have been something. And again, the answer is they were the people. They're trying to take you away from being the people and make you a citizen so that you are subject to the jurisdiction. And the second question we have to ask ourselves is, how is it that a nation, you see, the United States is a nation. The United States is not a country. You know, this is how dumbed down we've become. The United States is a nation. It is a trust, a corporation put together by the states. It's a corporate trust, and we're going to see that a little bit tonight too. It's a corporate trust created for the sole purpose to bring the union of the states together. And they wrote this constitution to put the government, this small government, it's supposed to be a small government that connects us together. They gave them their marching orders, what they can do and what they can't do. And of course, today it's totally out of control. It's become a huge monster. But a nation, let's look at the word nation. In American constitutional law, the word state is applied to the several members of the American Union, while the word nation is applied to the whole body of the people embraced within the jurisdiction of the federal government. So the nation is the collection of the people by pulling them together with all the states, but it is not a country. Your country is the state you live in. I come from the country of New York. It's the state of New York. Now, one of the ways we could tell the difference between what's a country and what is a corporate trust is the fact of what they call the leaders. In a trust, a corporate trust, you have a president and you have a board of directors. Well, that's the setup that we have in the United States. We have a president, a vice president, and a board of directors, which, of course, identifies with the two houses and the judicial system. Now, that system of government that we designed on the upper level is repeated, of course, in every state. And in every state, we have a governor. And that's what makes us a country. It's a governor. Now, that's a very important point to realize. And of course, you have got two problems here that you have to face. What were we before the 14th Amendment? And how does a nation become a country? Because it isn't. It is not a country. One of the key words, there's a couple of key words that we read here. And one of the words here is the word subject. Now, the word subject, out of Black's Law's Dictionary, 4th edition, 1891, reads that this is the constitutional law, one that owes allegiance to a sovereign. So if you're subject to the United States is the sovereign that you are subject to. So you owe allegiance to a sovereign and is governed by that sovereign's laws as citizens. They enjoy rights and franchises as subjects. They are bound to obey the law. So anytime the United States creates a law and they go through the process of putting together, for instance, we have the Patriot Act, and we have a lot of problems with the Patriot Act and certain things that they can do and so on, and certain things we have to, you know, we get in trouble for in the Patriot Act. And but that applies to U.S. citizens. It does not apply to the people. We have all these statutes that they've created with legislated, whether it's a state legislation or the U.S. legislation. You have all these legislation, and they create all these statutes. The purpose of statutes was not to put a finger on the people, not to control the people, but was to put control on government. That's the purpose of statutes. When you read very carefully through the Constitution, the Congress has the authority to write these statutes and laws to be applied upon the bureaucrats, upon municipalities, upon government agencies, upon elected individuals, but never was it ever meant to be applied upon the people. The U.S. government, and this is a big thought when you think about this, no government, including your state government, has an authority over you. If they have an authority over you, then they're the sovereign and you're the subject. But that's not the way it is. We're taught that way. We think that way. And it's kind of strange for us to realize, wait a second, the United States is subject to me. It's my jurisdiction that they're under. I'm not under their jurisdiction. Now, if you place yourself under their jurisdiction by calling yourself a U.S. citizen, well, therein is the problem. You've given them the authority for you, you know, to take control over you. You become subjected to them. Going back here to the 14th Amendment, here's another word that's in here. It's the word privilege. It says here, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges. I don't have privileges. I have rights. Now, they refer to these privileges as civil rights. I have unalienable rights, and there's a major difference between the two. A privilege in Black's Law Dictionary, 4th edition, 1891, is merely an accessory. This is a very interesting definition, by the way. Is merely an accessory of the debt which it secures and falls with the extinguishment of the debt. So when the debt is extinguished, the debt falls away. So your privileges are given to you for as long as they want to give it to you. Once they decide you're not going to have your privileges no more, then that's the end of that. And that's why we have so many problems when we get into courts. And we have to we'll get into those details later in the future. But that's where the problems in the courts are. It's the jurisdiction you're under. If you're under the jurisdiction and you come in as a U.S. citizen, and everybody is presumed to be so unless you make certain accusations in your paperwork in the courts, you're presumed to be a U.S. citizen. You're presumed to be under the jurisdiction of the United States, and therefore you're presumed to be under the jurisdiction of all statutes, whether it's within the state or whether it's in the federal government. And that's the big fraud upon the people. It's not the way this country was created. Another word is the word persons. They use this word persons a couple of times here in this particular amendment. Any person within its jurisdiction. Now, the word person is divided by law into a natural or artificial corporations. Okay, so we're looking at the artificial. And as a matter of fact, if you go into U.S. Code 26, it defines a person as a corporation, okay? And in the artificial, in the definition, in Black's Law Dictionary, going back in 1891, it says that the artificial person is a corporation or bodies politic. Now, I went to look up this word bodies politic also in Black's Law Dictionary, and what I found was quasi municipal corporation. That's what is called bodies politics. It's a corporation created for the sole purpose of performing one or more municipal functions. So all of our governments, when you see the state of New York, that's the corporate side. That's the body politics. Whenever I write a paper in the courts, I write New York State. I do not write State of New York. I turn it around. Whenever you see town of, okay, I'm in Hyde Park, which is a town, but it's not town of Hyde Park. Same thing with the county. County of Dutchess. No, it's Dutchess County. State of New York. No, it's New York State. So you see, they turn it around. For one way, it's a corporation. On the other way, it's an actual political item that's not a corporation. It's not part of that process. It's part of the government. So we got to be very careful how we speak. You know, we in America, we have three languages. One is the everyday language we speak, and we all understand each other to some degree. Then there is the slang language. And then the most important language is the legal language. And that's the one we want to be very careful with. When we use the word persons, we want to define the fact that we're meaning the person, the natural person. We want to put a footnote and make that point. When we speak about the jurisdiction, we want to define that jurisdiction, that we're in common law jurisdiction, not in statutory jurisdiction. And that is the problem we have. Now, let's look at the contrast. If we're one of the people, then we're above the government. We read, we the people. This is the preamble to our Constitution. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Now, therein is the key, okay? We are the people. And what are the people doing? They're ordaining and establishing. Who ordains? Kings ordain. You see, our founding fathers put this process together that we're all kings. Kings without subject. was subject only to ourselves. And nobody can put a law on a king. The king speaks the law. He makes his own law. He declares the law. And whatever the king says about his kingdom, that's the law. So any of these statutes that they try to apply to us in these town courts, these criminal courts, all of it is just control over us. Our prisons are full of people who don't belong there. Judge Bork, anybody who knows who Judge Bork is, said that 85% of the people in prison are there because they opened their mouth. In other words, they made a plea. They pleaded innocent or guilty, or they pleaded no contest. When we go to court, we don't plead innocent, we don't plead guilty, we don't plead no contest. We say, you guys don't have jurisdiction, we challenge jurisdiction. That's another, we could discuss that at a later date, and there's a way to challenge jurisdiction, and you can beat them. You just have to endure it. And you have to understand it and endure it. And once enough people start going into the courts and objecting to this court system, whether it be traffic court, whether it be criminal court, town court, municipal courts, all of these court systems, okay, all of them are illegal, unconstitutional. All of them is something that brings you into subjection to someone, some other group of people calling themselves sovereign, a government. But let's look at this word people. The word people, I'm going to read off a lot of Supreme Court cases. This is Waring versus Mayor of Savannah. People are supreme, not the state. That's what the U.S. Supreme Court says. It says the state cannot diminish rights of the people. In another case, we read, at the revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people, and they are truly the sovereign of the country. But they are sovereigns without subjects, with none to govern but themselves. Another Supreme Court case, the people of this state, as a matter of fact, this is a New York case. No, this is California. Well, it's a U.S. decision, though, U.S. Supreme Court decision. The people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. So who's going to go tell the king that he can't carry his sword? Who's going to tell the king that he can't get married without a license? Who's going to go tell the king that you need a driver's license to drive a car? Who's going to tell the king any of those things? Well, that's the problem, and we've been taught to think like slaves. We have to stand up for our own responsibility. You know, a lot of people, well, I've heard this from some people, say, well, we need these rules, we need these laws. No, you don't need these rules, and you don't need these laws. You become responsible for yourself. As a matter of fact, under common law, if you violate another individual by violating their person or violating their property, the consequences are far stronger than anything that we would suffer under statutory law. As a matter of fact, you know, we go back into the 150 years ago, maybe less, you stole a horse, it was the death penalty. Okay? That's how serious it was. And let me tell you, when people realize that they have to be responsible for their actions, hey, look, I drive a car. I think stopping at red lights is a great idea. And you know what? If I don't obey that rule and I happen to hurt someone or kill someone, let me tell you, under common law, big time stuff. You're not going to get away with it. Okay? You're going to pay for every bit of damage you've done. You know, even in these statutes, they put caps on things. Maybe a particular accident, the insurance company may only be required to cover $20,000. And if it's $100,000 worth of medical bills, there's a particular case out there we heard about recently about that. Tough business, you know. The person who got injured has to pay for it. Well, that's not justice. No, under common law, whoever causes the injury is going to pay for the whole thing. They're going to pay all for all the damages, and they're going to make restitution to the individual, and they might even lose their liberty, go to jail. They might even lose their life, okay? And it's all up to the 12 people that make that decision. It's called a jury, okay? And that's the process that we're under. So, again, I think it's a great idea to stop at red lights. But at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning when there's not a soul on the road and you've been driving for 20 minutes and you haven't seen anyone and you come up to a red light and you come to a stop and there's not a soul anywhere, well, hey, why can't you pass through the red light? Doesn't make sense that you should have to wait. You see, it's all about logic, and it's all about responsibility. And that's what common law is. And we either got to think like free people, or we're going to think, continue to think like slaves. And we have to come to that point to turn it all upside down. You know, under common law, it's not the judge that decides. It's the plaintiff. And whoever the plaintiff is, it's their court. And they're bringing in their suit because they're suing someone because they did wrong. And if that person, you know, says, wait a second, I didn't do wrong, well, they'll countersue. And you know what? The jury will decide, ultimately. But most people are U.S. citizens, they're slaves, so when a person who understands who they are, that they're a king, that they're sovereign, and they open up a court of record, and they become the tribunal, they become the judge. The judge is just the administrator of the court. And that's the way it should be, especially when you're going up against the government. Why should the government not only control the court, but make the actual decision when the judge is working for the government? That seems to be a conflict of interest in my books. The people are sovereign. The people should decide what the problem is with the government. The people should make the judgment on the government. We're going to court for over 2 years now, trying to make the New York State Board of Election obey the law. One simple law, that's all. And they're actually fighting us because they don't want to obey that law. And we have to go to court in order to do this. And yet, our first time around, well, the judge was deciding. And, of course, he decided for the government. Okay? Well, the second time around, we decide. And that's where our fight is right now. We've opened a court of record. And the people are the judges. And the judge is just an administrator. And we're going to make the government obey the people the way it should be. So again, it's a total upside down thinking from what we used to be. But once you start to think about this, it just makes so much more sense. There's nobody that could put a law upon you. You shouldn't have to, you know, it wasn't until 1868. As a matter of fact, in 1868, obviously the 14th Amendment, for those who don't know, was written to protect the slaves in the states that were unable to achieve their rights. And that's why they wrote that. Of course, that was the excuse for them to write that. They tried to get everyone into that system. They tried to move the white man, the black man, everybody into it. But the people wouldn't have it back in those days. It took them till over the turn of the century before people, you know, were dumbed down enough to grow up going through schools thinking that they're U.S. citizens and that they're subject to the United States and so on and so forth, and that they've lost their freedom. Now they're ruled over by these people who are just way out of control. But that's the problem, and that's the process we've gone through. So we have to turn this whole thing around. Let me take a look here at some of these notes. The word king, in the Black's Law Dictionary, the sovereign ruler holds the highest executive power. Ordained, to enact a constitution or a law. So the people make the law, the people make the constitution. We give the legislators the power to make the statutes to control the government, to control particular things going on. If they do create a Department of Labor or some other department, then they have to make rules for how it works. The Board of Election has a set of rules. Matter of fact, it's called election law. They have to obey it. We don't have to obey it because it's not upon us. It's upon them. It's written for them. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of governments, sovereignty itself remains with the people by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is the definition and limitation of power. That's what law is. It defines the limitation of power. It should not have anything to do to control your life. So we're taught we have to go out and get a driver's license. We're taught we have to go out and get a marriage license. We've got to get permission to get married, permission to drive. We're taught we have to go out and get a permit or a license to carry a gun, even to own a sidearm. We're taught we have to get hunting licenses. We have to get All these building permits, all these things. Okay, this is what we're taught, and we don't need to do any of those things if we're free. We should be able to do anything we want. Of course, it makes sense, especially in today's day with our building and what we're doing. It makes sense that maybe you should have some around to take a look at the project and make sure that it's safe and secure. And you know what? If someone builds something and it's not safe and secure and someone gets hurt, they got to pay for it. And if someone gets killed, they're going to pay with their life, because that's what common law requires. So common law could be much more stricter than statutory law. Just as long as you can do anything you want, just as long as you don't injure another individual, you know. And in common law, there's also corrupting the morals of a minor. You know, you can't just go out and do whatever you want. And today we have statutory laws, and you're allowed to go corrupt the morals of minors. Matter of fact, they encourage it. They hand out condoms in school to your children. So this is what we have. And when people understand this concept of freedom and understand that they don't owe nothing to anyone, you know, we are in control of our own lives, and the government doesn't have any authority over us. And I want to tell you, there is a process, there's groups of people, I speak not only of other people, but also of myself and others around me, that we're going through this process and fighting in the courts right now, all kinds of court cases of things, saying, we don't have to do this, we don't have to do that, we don't have to do this. And we're getting successes, and we've been working, and we haven't had our successes yet. We're in the process, very close, of a lot of successes, but it is a battle, you know, because they resist you in the courts, but there is a process, and we found the process, and we are teaching it. And so, anyway, so one of the things we are involved with, and this is the first principle people have to realize, is that they're free, and they have to start thinking free and be responsible for themselves. And then they have to deny jurisdiction to these court systems. And again, we can show you how. All right, with that, let me open up the mics. Unmute all. Okay, everybody is unmuted, so anybody can speak if they want.
Yeah, I've got some.
If you're going to speak, first off, just tell us your first name and maybe what state. And if you're in New York, let us know your county.
Okay, so this is Liam Malone. I'm in Kentucky. I wrote a book called Economic Cures They Don't Want You to Know About, and I've addressed a lot of the things that you just discussed, most notably that the 14th Amendment isn't even the original 14th Amendment. There was an amendment that actually would serve to keep these just us thugs out of office and out of our courts in the first place, but that law has been disregarded. And the most notable thing that I think about everything that you've said is that this comes down to what I say in my book, you can be right or you can be dead right. And I also say that if you are not a member of the Just Us Club, which is the lawyers and the courts, then you'll get no justice. And I think that that's an observable fact that we're all aware of. Now, it seems to me that the biggest problem with the process that you're undertaking is getting those who are in power to recognize our authority, and they've got all the guns. So that's why it comes down to you can be right or you can be dead right, and so often you end up dead right in this process. I've had many conversations with Jim Condit about how we can take back the government, and in fact Jim and I coordinated to write a chapter in the book that explained how to take the republic back through the precinct. You're talking about doing it through the committee, and I'm not up to speed on that, so I apologize. I'll have to take some time and read
the same thing. Same thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you're actually right on, actually.
Yeah, it's the same thing that you're talking. You just call it a different word. We call election districts. Some places call it precincts.
And they
same
make
thing.
The committee.
And, yeah, right. Committee men, you know.
So,
By the way, if you can, I just would like to say this. What's your first name again?
It's Liam.
Liam. If you could, maybe you can send me an email or give me a call. If you go out to newyorkcommitteeman.org, my phone number is out there on contact, and you can give me a call, and I'd like to get your phone number. And maybe in the future we can have you on as a guest, because we do want to start getting guests, and it sounds like you have some knowledge and have written a book, and you might be someone that would want to do that, and you can give us sort of an intro on what it is you're doing, maybe 20 minutes, 15 minutes, and then an open forum where we'd ask you questions. So we can all benefit from that.
Sure. Can you give me your email address, and I'll...
Yeah, well, let me just give you my phone number. I give my phone number to everyone. It's on the site. It's
845-233-6560.
And if you call me during the day, you know, I'm usually available. If you miss me, leave a message. I'll get back to you. And you know, it's better off calling me than an email. I don't want to miss it, so we can talk a little bit. We meet a lot. Are you on Skype?
Actually, I do have a Skype number as well,
okay.
Liam Alone. It's just all in one word.
What is it?
Liam Alone, all one word, LIAMALLONE.
LIAMALLONE. O-N-E. Okay, I'm going to put you on my pal list. I have my Skype on all the time, so if you're on my pal list, you know, we can get two or three or four people together and talk with you. And I'm John Durash on Skype also, so, but I'm gonna put tonight when I get off this program, I'm going to add you and hopefully add me on, and then we can talk through Skype.
So, you know, Liam is showing up in the TalkShoe blog client.
Okay.
And he has it spelled out just the way you said it.
Oh,
I think, right?
Oh yeah, I see it right now. LIAMALL. Okay, got it. So, right, go ahead. You were saying, if you remember what the place was.
Okay. I think we were talking about the precinct, and in the book we basically spelt out the way we take our republic back is to simply take control of the precinct, even if we just focus on one party, the Republican, to become the chair of the Republican committee for your state for choosing who your representative is going to be. If we can ensure that we get the representative that we want, that we get put up as our candidate, and there's a high probability that that's the candidate that's going to be elected by the people in that state. And even, you know, we say in there that there's a few things that you have to look for as red flags, because there are so many people who are, you know, they're alleging that they're friends, like the Occupy movement and the Tea Party movement and all that. They allege that they're friends, but all of these organizations have been co-opted. So what are the things that you're going to be looking for that will tell you whether you've got somebody true or whether you've got someone who's really, corrupted? And that is to see what platform they push for when it comes down to the issue of money. The key thing about money is that people don't understand that our money system is completely corrupted and that it's got a flawed accounting principle in it. And that has been highlighted for over 100 years by the likes of Nobel laureate Frederick Soddy, and also by Major C.H. Douglas, who came up with the whole notion of social credit, which, if you want to find out about social credit, just go to Wikipedia. There's an excellent series of articles that describe what it's all about. But if I would put it down to a simple description of what is the problem with our money, the problem is that we have a shortage of it, and the only way our money is being issued into circulation is by it being issued as debt. And right now, all of the debt money is being issued by the banks. We, the people, are being charged interest on that debt, and that debt is compounding, which is why taxes are ever increasing, because the interest on that debt is ever increasing. And we're fast approaching the tipping point where the taxes are so high that we're all ready to revolt against those taxes, because, I mean, when we get $101 taxed on the $100, will that be the point that we've had enough? No, it's going to be way before that, and we're approaching that. So here is the essence of what the money problem is. Consider this mathematical equation. Let A be a value that is greater than zero, and let B be any value that is greater than zero. Our economy is operating on the basis of A equals A plus B, and that's not possible. And how is that? How does that work where rubber hits the road? Well, it all comes down to price. Everything that is manufactured has two critical price components. The A component, as C.H. Douglas described it, was that money which is paid to us in the form of wages, earnings, and dividends. In other words, it's money that lands in our pockets with which we can buy merchandise. And the B costs are everything else: capital costs, land, equipment, depreciation, raw materials, transportation, fuel, computers, telecommunications. Everything that is not paid out as wages is B costs. Well, you can't tell me a single good or service that is produced in the marketplace that that is not comprised of both A costs and B costs. Without exception, everything is. And you can see it in our economy right through our public statistics. In the United States in 2008, I did a study, and it was $14 trillion gross domestic product. Well, gross domestic product is the price that was achieved for all goods and services. It's the price of everything that was sold. That's a fact. That's what the gross domestic product is. But the total wages, earnings, and dividends, as reported by the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, was only $8 trillion, which means that there was a $6 trillion gap, a shortage of purchasing power with which to buy that merchandise. If you break it down per person, it boils down to about $17,000 per person. Well, we still live in an economy where there are two children for every man and woman in this country, which means the average family size is four, which means there's a shortage of $70,000 per household. All you have to do to solve our economic problem is simply issue that money to people in the form of a guaranteed income or in the form of a compensated price in when we buy things, which is to say, rather than being charged sales tax, you can get a sales credit for the purchases that you make. And when you look at those numbers that I just described, you could give a guaranteed income to every man and woman over the age of 18 in this country of $2,000 a month, and that would only account for 48 of that $70,000 shortage per household. You could give a 25% discount at retail for all of the goods that consumers purchase, not what businesses purchase. They don't get a break. Only the end consumer who buys the end merchandise, give him a 25% credit on everything that he purchases. That will suck up the rest of the gap. Now, if we do that, we can pitch Social Security over the wall, welfare, all these entitlement payments, all this pork barrel that's going on.
What's the name of your book?
Economic Cures They Don't Want You to Know About.
Economic Cures That They Don't Want You to Know About.
You want a URL where you can go buy it?
Yeah, let me get a URL.
Okay, hold on.
Maybe you can put it in the text chat. It'd be best because we can cut and paste it in a Word in a notepad or something. I agree with a lot that you have to say. I'm not so much sure on a lot of this economic stuff. Of course, it makes sense. The key problem to all this is without power, we can't make any of these changes that you suggested. In order to make these changes, we have to take the political power back. We have to take control from the state, starting in our election districts. Let me also ask you another question. Now, what state did you say you were in again?
Kentucky.
I know Ohio, they have caucuses to elect their committeemen. How do you elect your committeeman in Kentucky?
I'm new to the state, and I just moved here last October. So, frankly,
okay,
I don't know exactly how the process works.
And maybe another time in the future you could tell me once you find out. Because I can tell you right now, anybody that's in a state that they elect committeemen by caucuses, they're not elected for their election districts, and they're not elected committeemen. They're a facade, just like they are here in New York. In New York, they took one step bigger than that, is they actually created a whole new animal called the member of the county committee, which is also referred to as a town committeeman. It's a very specific thing that George Washington warned us about, that this is how they're going to subvert us and take our system over is through town committeemen. But in any event, here in New York, the town committeemen, they are nominated very clear in election law when you study very closely, but you have to be very careful looking at the words. But what they do is they nominate the member of the county committee at the primary. Okay, they do this through a designating petition, which they walk around in their election district. And they actually walk anywhere. And then if there's a challenge, then they go to the primary, just like if someone's running for Senate, if there's a challenge, they go to the primary. If there's no challenge, then they don't go to the primary. But that's how they get elected. They don't get elected. They get, what's the word I'm looking for?
Nominated.
Nominated, thanks. They get nominated. But they are elected at a meeting, a private meeting, at a later date after the primary and after the election. Then they're elected. And so that's not an elected committeeman. An elected committeeman is someone who actually is elected from within their own election district, period. Okay?
Right.
And that's what Jim Condit
explained the state of Ohio. The way that works is the state is divided up into over 200 counties, and each county has basically a couple of hundred precincts, which boil down to a couple of city blocks. And at the time of an election, there is a on the ballot a nomination for the leader of your precinct for your political party, and so the person two-thirds of the precincts go unchallenged, as he said.
But that's,
and so,
that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's my point. It seems that every state has distorted the system. They've created a fraud. They've made things look like they're right, but they're not. And there's only one right way. I believe in, and I don't know this, but I can tell you right now, when I first discovered this in New York, I said, wow, you know, there's nobody in this particular county elected. I wonder how many counties are like this. And as we kept looking out more and more and more, I started to suspect the whole state's like this. Lo and behold, the entire state of New York, there wasn't anybody elected. It's everything's a fraud. It's a facade, just like the Federal Reserve. It appears to be something that it's not. And so we started looking at this. I know Pennsylvania, they do, again, they do the same thing with, they elect people at these meetings. What's the word? I had that word before. The caucuses. Okay, they go to a caucus. And they elect people out of a caucus, but that's anybody that can vote for them. That's not the people in their elected in their district. And then they go through the process, and I think they get to decide at some point, but they have an executive committee just like we do have in New York. So Pennsylvania has the similar problems. I have not seen the law in Pennsylvania, but I've heard stories from people in Pennsylvania, and it sounds just like us. Florida, I think, has the same problem that we have. The only way we can tell, though, is if someone is interested to find out if they have this problem in their state, all they need to do is find their election law, get a copy to me, and I can probably find it very quickly. You know, you should be able to find an electronic copy of the election law like we have in New York. But if we go through it, I'm sure we could probably discover quite quickly by seeing the process of how this happens if they are not elected by individuals in their election district. And the law in New York State is very clear that they must be elected at the primary election, okay? Elected, not nominated. It's the only person, well, that's not true because there's also delegates that are elected at the at the primary election also here in New York. But those are the only two people in New York that are elected at the primary election. Everyone else is nominated. So this is the big fraud. This is the problem. And with our in our situation, we literally can take over the entire process overnight, both parties, because we have both parties. We have people from both parties working with us. We have people who are elected in Democrats and people who are elected in the Republican parties. And it's a small group of people, and we'll appoint everyone else till the next election cycle. But it gives the opportunity of the small group of people that are all in one accord and focus on trying to bring this republic back here in New York. So we have a year, okay, before the next election. And that is plenty of time for us to do what we have to do to make things straight and train the people who are in the system that we appoint or are sitting in appointed seats now, train them to think like free people again. And that's our goal, that's our endeavor. And everyone in every state needs to be thinking the same way. But once we take control of the process, and it's a very simple process, when we win our court case, and we do expect to win this court case, when we win this court case, then we will then get a order to the sheriff to acknowledge us as the elected committeemen and to deal with us as the elected committeemen. Once we do that and we take over the process and we dismiss all of the executive committees around the state, and then we take those positions and you know, give them out to anybody that's in the liberty groups. And to take.
But now, what are you going to do if the Just Us Club finds against you and basically strikes you down in court? The Just Us Club.
Oh, well, that's a good thing. That's what's been happening to us. We discovered, I don't know if you've heard of Thornton, and who's been teaching a process called the Court of Record. And that's how we intend on defeating this process. It's bringing back the common law court. And this is what we're fighting in the courts right now. We've got numerous cases going on as we speak in common law courts. And, yeah, it's like pulling teeth and it's going against the grain. And I agree. I view all the trial court judges and the lawyers and all these people as the bottom feeders. They're eating crap off the bottom. They live off of statutes, and when you bring in real law, they don't understand it. And when
they're traitors. The original 14th Amendment is still law that stands. They're traitors.
I agree.
They are outlaws.
I agree 100% with you. I call them criminals all day long. It's a common word that comes up out of my mouth often, and not necessarily by design, because it's just I see criminals and I call them for what they are. So all these people, we never have an intention to win in a trial court. We know we'll always lose in the trial court. We're fighting on the higher level to the people who understand this up on the higher courts and the appellate court, the court of appeals, even into the federal Supreme Courts. Now, as much as they seem to be our enemy, there is a problem. And again, it gets back to education. It gets back to understanding this system. When you go through the trial courts and you accept the fact that you're a slave under a certain jurisdiction, then when you get to the appellate court and you appeal and say, hey, I have these constitutional rights, well, look at the state that disagrees, and they're not giving you constitutional right. You're under their jurisdiction, and you know what? You lose and they win. It's over and over and over again. If you know Robert Schultz, great guy. He's done a lot of great work. He put together the Continental Congress. He did the symposiums out there in Washington, D.C., and he's been fighting a lot of cases, and he's got a lot of wins under his belt. But where he runs astray is when the big, big battles, when he goes up against the government on the big battles, like on the voting boxes, or he goes up against them on taxes, he always gets found with no standing on the higher level, on the high end of this thing. Because when they see that he has no standing, they're telling him, look, you're a U.S. citizen. You're in subjection to all of these statutes. They got all these rules and statutes they can pull upon you and throw, and they destroy you. Okay, well, he doesn't fight the battle from the other position. Matter of fact, we're talking with him now, trying to convince him to just change some words in his papers. And you know, we don't even allow the judge to rule. We're in the middle of a process right now. We're going up to the appellate court for what's called a petition for a writ of mandamus, which is for the upper court to order the lower court to obey the rules and the laws of the court. And
right, a judge is nothing more than a referee. Your real judge is your jury.
Well, yeah, but if there's no jury, then the sovereign of the court is the judge. In other words, when I go to court and I open a court of record, and the other side doesn't ask for a jury, and the state can't ask for a jury, okay, I rule over the state. I'm the judge. I get to make the decision. I write the orders. I make the decisions. Now, they're not used to that, and it sounds kind of upside down and crazy. It is upside down. That's not the crazy thing. The crazy thing is to actually give the people power to the state and let the state rule over you, especially in decisions when the people come up and say, wait a second, you're not obeying the law, and the state turns around and rules against you and throws you out of court. Okay?
John, absolutely.
That's insane. That's insane.
Yeah. Everything is upside down. Even our money's upside down. Our money is backed by the full faith and credit of we the people. That means it's backed by our labor. Well, if the money is backed by our labor, then the collateral is us and our property. Why are we paying interest on our property? That would be like being a property owner who would rent his house out to somebody, and he's got to pay the tenant for the privilege of the tenant living in his house. That's what we're doing with banks.
Well, this
that's what we're doing with
the
national debt.
Yeah. You know, I'd like to,
quickly,
I think
John,
on the money end of things, hang on one
quickly.
Second. On the money end of things, I'd like to try to not talk too much about that. I'd like to have you on one evening, and we can spend a whole evening on that. I want to try to, maybe there's other people with questions, or maybe you have more questions concerning the committee man process or the judicial process. Carl.
Well, John, I'd like to shut up and leave the floor to somebody else, but may I just say my website for the benefit of those that are on the call?
Please, put it out in the text chat, too.
And put it on the text chat, because that's what I was going to say.
Go ahead. What's the
put it out there.
What's the website?
It's www.drmz, David Robert Michael Zebra. .net/DM, like Dean Martin, /catalog.html.
Catalog is CATALOG?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay, I got it too. Put it out in the text chat also so other people can see it. No, I do.
How do I do that?
Let me see. What's your name?
He's probably
You're not in the text chat.
Right, he's on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know how to get on it. I put in the call ID under Go, and it brought me to a Liberty Alliance page, and there's nothing here. It's just a bunch of noise. It's a busy page.
Mm-hmm. Well, anybody can explain that. I go, if you go to Liberty Alliance, and then you when the call is live, you see a sign, I think it turns green, and it says Join Now, Live Call. And when you click on that, then the page should open up. And then that's the text area. Then on the bottom right side, if you're not in on phone, at the bottom right side, it should be booting up to give you audio. And if it doesn't, you can click on it, and it opens up whatever, an MP3 player or something on your computer to hear for the stream. So,
yeah.
But try that. Try going to, you know, out to Liberty Alliance on TalkShoe, and then get to our page. When you get to our page, just click on Join Now, and you'll be able to come in that way.
So I put his website on the blog, and I checked.
Okay, great.
So it's there.
Yeah, we want you to continue in our conversation. I just want to get away from the money thing right now and stick towards the focus of committeemen and the political and judicial process. And I do want to get into more detail with you with the money, and we'll talk about that.
But I agree that
yeah.
should be a separate show, and that's the other thing is you might want to post it open to other people to ask questions.
Yeah. Anybody else out here got a question or a comment? Mics are open. Gerard, are you with us today?
Yeah, I'm in here. I had some trouble earlier.
All right. You got anything you want to make a statement or
kind of
comment or anything?
I kind of missed the first half hour, so I assume you brought everybody up to date on what we're doing.
Oh, we were very, very late. We actually didn't start the recording until something like 8:45, 8:50. We had problems, too. So you might have came in just when we were really
scared. Oh, I heard you start the recording, and I was 37 minutes late or something. So.
Yeah, well, yeah, because we had a problem.
I didn't miss too much then.
No, you didn't miss anything. You missed all the problems.
I like missing problems. That doesn't happen for me very often.
Hey, by the way, let me push everybody on this. It is extremely important that we get people to join our group. It's extremely important that we bring people to these Monday night meetings, drag them to here, and learn about what's going on. Our episodes are up on, this is a recording, and it's going to be up. It's called episode, this is episode 2. And so episode 2 right now, well, I got to fix it because right now it's episode 3, but I'll fix it. It's going to be episode 2. And people can come up and they can see our first 2 or 3 recordings and they can listen to them in their free time before they come in and be caught up to date with where we're at and what we're talking about. So again, last week we were talking about, basically what this group is about and what we're doing. And this week we're really looking at defining, you know, how to think free and ultimately giving you the problems, which is the 14th Amendment in contrast to the preamble to the Constitution. So either you are one of we the people or a U.S. citizen. I'm not a U.S. citizen. I don't want to be a U.S. citizen. I used to think I was a U.S. citizen. There's no such thing as a U.S. citizen because you're a citizen to a corporation if you're a U.S. citizen, and you're in subjection to them, and that corporation is a person, and that person is the sovereign, and you have to lick their boots. And that's the bottom line in this whole thing. People have got to understand that concept. And the moment we get away from this and change our thinking and the way, let me tell you, when you get up in court and talk about these things, people that are sitting in the back, they try to, when they realize what you're doing after a while and you come back for another thing or whatever, they kind of keep you to last because they don't want nobody else hearing about this. People are interested. Their seats move up. Their ears open up. They lean their heads up. They want to hear what's going on here. You know, who is this guy? Why is he, you know, because we're defying these people in court on paper and verbally. And that's what we all have to do. If we're all doing this, we would have our freedom tomorrow. If all the people understood this, we'd be free tomorrow. Done deal. Because the courts wouldn't be able to deal with all the people saying, no, you're not going to rule over me. I rule you. This is my jurisdiction, not yours. So anyway, with that little speech, anybody got anything? Liam? Is that how you say your name? L-I-A-M? Liam?
Liam.
Liam. Well, Gerard, anybody got anything? Joe? All right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to shut the recording off now, and we'll continue talking for a while, but I don't want this to go on too long.
Hey, before you shut it off, I got one remark I think I'd like to throw in there.
Yeah, go right ahead.
The whole reason why I raised the issue of money is that I believe that the primary reason why you can't get the public engaged in actually stepping up and defending their own rights is that they're so busy working for the means of their bread that they just don't put the energy that is necessary into, you know, learning what they need to learn to defend themselves. It's like anybody can go into court and defend themselves by, you know, writing their own affidavits. They don't need to hire a lawyer to do that, but they don't do that because of the effort that's involved. And I think the rallying point that will get a lot of people engaged is to realize that they're being screwed royally by the money system, and the rallying cry has got to be that we're going to put the people in power that we need in power because we want to take back control of our livelihoods, our money, and the means of our bread, and the, you know, for ourselves and for our progeny. And the only way to do that is with the precinct movement. And I believe that the two together are the synergistic thing that, you know, need to work together in order to get enough people engaged.
Well, I
even
agree.
That's an uphill battle.
I agree. You know, one of the things we're talking about right now, and we will, as soon as we take power and we get all the people together, you know, on the state level, we're going to talk about certain solutions. And one of the problems we have is money here in New York State. How do we bring real money back? And we were throwing around some ideas of silver, particularly, because there's a lot of silver coins going out. Maybe there's not enough, but we got to do something. We got to figure something. We got to stop dealing with this crazy. Really, it's a debt note is what it is. It's not money at all.
Yeah.
It's just a debt.
Let me address the issue of bullion money. Like, that's a completely ridiculous position to take because the economy can grow far faster than the rate of new gold and silver that we can pull out of the ground. We become constrained by the body of bullion. And furthermore, the lion's share of the bullion is actually sitting in the hands of the international banksters right now. Anybody who thinks there's any gold left in Fort Knox is delusional.
I'd like to talk with you at some point and get a little idea of what you're talking about because, you know, really we need to figure out a plan here in New York and, you know, we do believe at some point we will take power and when that happens, that's one of the problems we have. And so I'd like to hear your ideas and I'm sure other people here in New York would like to hear your ideas too.
Yeah.
But that is a major problem we have is money, you're right, and they tie us down because we're so busy. Two people, both of us, you know, father and mother and families, husband and wife, everybody's got to work to keep things going, to keep afloat. It's really tough. And so we're real busy there, you know. Did I hear a voice pipe up that they wanted to talk?
Yeah, I have some friends in Arkansas, and they're implementing their own currency down there. I don't know if that would interest you, but it's interesting what they're doing.
What currency?
Calling it Arbucks, Arbucks.
There's a town in New York that has its own currency called Ithaca Hours.
Okay, see, that's good. But I think maybe it would be good to look at the things other people are doing.
Sure.
And see what ideas apply.
Can you got my email address, don't you?
I'll send you a link to them.
Yeah, if you could. Send me a link, and I'll try to get out or get someone else to get out and start looking into some of these things. And we need to think about money.
Definitely.
This is the type of stuff that has to be done across the board because if only one or two people do it, the government comes out against it and they get you for,
right.
for illegally counterfeiting money and minting money and all this stuff. So they get real protective when you start messing with the money. That's why they take out leaders. Like that, the reason they took Saddam Hussein out is because he decided he was only going to take gold for the oil. And that was the end
of
that.
Gaddafi. Same with John Kennedy. Same with Abraham Lincoln.
Yes. So you get messing with the money, they get their gander up really quickly. So
yeah. Well, is that what's going on in Syria?
Yes, absolutely.
Huh.
It's all about the money.
Are the Palestinians issuing their own money, or they did something else in order to be in their situation?
No. The issue is that they want to sell their oil in a denomination other than U.S. dollars.
Yeah,
that
I know.
And the only thing that's backing the U.S. dollar up on the world stage right now is oil. The fact that all oil is
traded
in U.S.
currency. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right because they made that deal back, what, in 71 or 73 or something? and
yep.
And you had to have a dollar to buy oil, and now they want to collapse it, and that's going to collapse the United States. And that's why New York and every state that hears this problem, anybody that's in another state, these are major problems. We have to take over this process now. We can't wait any longer. And again, we here in New York are poised to take it over possibly before this year is out, if not probably January. But we do intend on doing it relatively soon. And once we get that into that process, we need to move quick, fast enough to save New York from collapsing. Because all you know, when you run the committee man process, and you know, we had our conference out in Kingston, New York, on June 2nd this year, 2012. And as a matter of fact, we do have that recorded. It's up online, newyorkcommitteeman.org. Just click on the conference, and I think it's just New York Conference. And in any event, at that conference, we came to certain agreements. We rewrote all the rules. We wrote a resolution, and we agreed in one accord that, you know, the first order of business to become free is to go into your prayer closet and talk to God, because if we don't have it right with God, we're not going anywhere. Okay, because we have to deal with the justice system to begin with. And when you move into the justice system, the word justice is synonymous with I always forget this word. I don't know why. What's the
virtue.
One I'm looking for, Gerard?
Virtue.
Just got to think of a V. Okay, virtue. It's synonymous with virtue, and virtue flows from God. You know, we read about it in the Bible. It flows from Christ, and it flows from God. So, you know, if you don't have virtue, you can't have justice, and we'll be cursed. You know, the Bible says my people, you know, they perish for lack of knowledge. And it's not just spiritual knowledge of the Lord, but it's also knowledge of freedom, too. Exercising the authority and righteousness that you should be doing. And the other thing is if we don't have justice and we don't have righteousness, how are we going to correct our political process? So we did come to one accord. That was a major thing I think we hit up in Kingston, is that people accepted and realized the fact that that's where it starts. And so we need to go into this system in a righteous sense. We have to go in with truth, and we have to stay away from falling into all this corruption, and not in there for power, but to save the country. And if we have that attitude, we can bring that throughout the entire political and judicial process.
Yeah. You know, it's possible to take control of, to provide all the funding you need, even with the existing infrastructure. It's like North Dakota is doing. It's what Ellen Brown is all about with the Public Banking Institute. If you had a state bank in New York City, if you chartered a state bank, you could issue your own money against the collateral of the people of the state of New York. That would be it. And you could issue all the money you want. You could issue it at no interest, at very low interest. Any interest that's paid on it could go back into the public coffers to lower the debts of the state. It would be a
cakewalk. How do you issue money? Where does the money come from that you issue?
Where does the money come from today? It's issued as debt.
Right,
against
but
the
we
full
do have a problem.
Of the people.
I do realize in desperate times calls for desperate measures, so maybe that is the answer to the problem. One of the problems we have is that no state is to coin money, and that would identify with printing it too. And nothing but gold or silver is to be, you know, the monies. So we
no,
do have
that's
a
not,
constitutional
that's not what the Constitution
problem.
Says. The Constitution
doesn't
say that. That's what the Coinage Act says, the First Coin Act. The Constitution doesn't say that. So when you talk about money being backed by gold and silver, what do you think is more valuable? The gold and silver that the Rothschilds and Rockefellers are holding right now, which is the lion's share of it? Or
no,
do you think it's the full faith and credit of the people?
I
what is more valuable?
No, I do understand what you're saying. I'm just telling you we have a dilemma because I don't know the solution to this. The money problem is something that we haven't figured anything out on yet.
Okay,
that's
so money is issued out of thin air is the bottom line. So you just issue money out of thin air, but you issue it under the Public Banking Institute. You order it drafted against the state legislature for funding the operations of government, and you spend it into circulation. Voila, you have money.
No, I'm not going to argue that point. It sounds pretty good. I need more detail, and you know, I really want to grab you in on Skype one evening and maybe get a couple other people with us and really hammer this kind of an idea out and see if we can make a plan and and offer
sure.
it to people. And we have an interview with you here online, and all of this could be very helpful. We can on that day is when we can focus in on possibly a solution for New York and,
yes.
and any state, really, any state.
We
still have to deal with the constitutional question and the constitutional problem, which I do know there is. They talks about the coining of money and setting the rates thereof. But again, you know, I'm going to listen to what you seem to have some knowledge of this. So we'll go back. We'll start. That's the place I want to start, is what the Constitution says and how we ought to look at this and see what the proper interpretation of this might be, and then work from there.
Right.
And again, I do agree there's another problem here. You know, desperate times calls for desperate measures. You know, sometimes you have to do things differently because there's no other way to do it. You know, they put us in such a box that you can't drive without a license. Okay. Well, I don't have a license to drive anymore. I got a different mindset. I do have a driver's license, but it's only when I'm going to operate a motor vehicle. And I haven't operated a motor vehicle in a very, very long time. I do have a horseless carriage. That's my thinking. Okay. And when the cop stops me and asks for my license, you know, why is he asking for me for my license? Because he thinks I'm driving a motor vehicle. And if I give him a hard time, he's going to give me a hard time. So I give him that license. Again, this is my mindset. And if I get into traffic court, if I have to get into that discussion, that's my mindset. Do I have a driver's license? Well, sure, I do. I have one just in case I have to drive a motor vehicle sometime and get involved in the commercial process of life. But right now...
Do you have a state license plate on your car?
Well, that's another problem. But you see, one of the interesting things is this. They're not even going to ask you about the license part because they're not smart enough to ask that. And they're definitely not going to ask you about the plates. And once they start to get and open those doors, they've raised questions. Now, they've raised issues. Now, I have questions, which is going to show fraud. So the thing is this. The point of my license point is a state of mind for me to have. I don't bring it up. They don't bring it up when you go to court. Okay? And now you can argue the point of jurisdiction. Okay, and you know that you're right. And again, I got a driver's license, so I don't go to jail. You know. But they've created an environment that you can't get around. You know. What are you going to do? You know, the banking industry is the major problem. Also, you know, you have to have a social security number to open a bank account. I hear there are other ways, but
there are. You can open a W-3 account. Open it as a foreign.
Well, I'd like to talk to you about that. I've heard about different ways, okay? But right now, I'm sovereign, and I just choose to, well, I'll deal with this, and I'll use that. It doesn't take my rights away. You know, if they think it does, tell me how it does, and now they're going to reveal their fraud. Certain things, I didn't know that. Well, the contract is now null and void, isn't it? You see, because it's all fraud. It's all fraud. But you see, this is what the people have to know. If they understood these things, if everybody understood this, or majority of the people understood this, we literally could be free tomorrow morning. Literally, we would be free. It's a mind. It's a position of mind.
You know, John, think of all the probably man weeks of effort that you've put into reading to learn what you've learned, to understand who you are juxtaposed to your government. And I can say that for me, it's probably man months approaching man years.
Yeah.
And I'm confident in what I know.
Yes,
and in fact, I've done battle with like banksters of America and won in court writing my own affidavits, you know, extinguishing debt. I understand the whole driver's license issue, but I choose to get the state plate and drive with the state license for the simple reason that I choose my battles. But I do understand that when I register my vehicle that I'm entering into a trustee law.
And you're still sovereign.
And I've given them my car.
And you're still sovereign, and you still don't have to pay the tickets. As a matter of fact, Thornton came up with a process, which I'm in the middle of doing myself, which really gets me onto a list. I want to keep that license. I wouldn't need it in New York anymore once I get on the list. There's a process of going through a lawsuit and suing them, and I'm doing that right now and getting a judgment. A declaratory judgment, along with some money too, because they owe me money now.
Here's where the argument breaks down. If you've got a solution to this, then I'm interested in hearing it. The bottom line is, when you license your car with the state, you're entering into a trustee relationship when you register your vehicle. The instant that you buy it,
correct.
They become the owner, you're the beneficial owner. And when a cop stops you driving that car, he's not stopping you because you're driving your car. He's stopping you because you're driving their car
but he doesn't know that.
Their roads.
But he doesn't know that. And these judges are so stupid that they think that's the way it is, and they don't know it either. I'm telling you, I deal with these judges now. We're in quite a few courts. And let me tell you, I seriously mean this. These town judges, these traffic court judges or municipalities and towns, they're morons. That's not just, I am calling them morons because they're criminals and everything, but they literally are morons when it comes to understanding the law and what they're doing. They think this is just the way it is, and they don't know it either. Neither do the prosecutors. They don't have a clue. It's all compartmentalized. And when you really go into the process and you fight it, you don't have to bring those issues up, and they certainly never raise them, so it always goes back to one thing, jurisdiction, and as long as they don't make that raise the other points, which they never do, you're going to win in the upper courts when you get into the appellate court. You're going to win the game, okay? And the best thing to do is one of the things that Thornton teaches is, look, go pay the ticket. Just go pay the ticket and then sue them. And that's what I did. I paid the ticket. Now I'm going to sue them. And I'm going through a process. It starts off with what's called a notice and demand, turns it into a commercial process, but we're using that really for the process to get into a court of record or just a regular court where we're losing the trial court, and then we go up to the appellate court and we win there and we get our declaratory judgment because they're not going to make the argument correct. When you go and fight the IRS, they don't make it plain on the table of what they're doing. It's all done behind the scenes. They're the sovereign, and you're the subject, and they're dealing with you in that very – matter of fact, all tax courts are courts of record. So the way to beat that is you go into their court and you say, wait a second here. I challenge your jurisdiction. I'm the sovereign here. You're the servant. You got this thing upside down. Now, once you challenge that jurisdiction, you turn it around, you now take the process of that court of record, and you now are the tribunal. When you go into that courtroom, those judges or the one judge or tribunal of judges, whatever it is, sometimes it's more than one, but that judge in that court, okay, he is there representing the sovereign, and he's going to reflect the sovereign. He's going to declare and make the will of the sovereign, and he's going to rule according to the sovereign. And in the mind of that judge, the sovereign is the IRS. And you're going to lose. I don't care what you do. You'll lose every time. Very rarely do people win there. But when you go in and you take it away from them, there's nothing they could do about it. And when they realize you understand, they want you out of their courtroom real quick. When we went into family court, they understood that we knew the game and what was going on. They kicked us out in 3 weeks. We were out of there, done, case thrown out. Okay? And that doesn't happen in New York State. So it's the same thing. And if they do try to push it any further, you take that to the appellate court, I'm going to tell you, they have no choice but to rule on your side. And we have U.S. Code 18, U.S. Code, I think it's 1845. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong on that. But those two U.S. codes you have, I think it's 45, is 245, 46, and 47. And in the 18, I think it's subsection, 1968 and 69 or something like that, which talks about violation of your rights by anyone under color of law. And when there's more than one, for instance, a judge and a prosecutor working together, that's two, conspiring against me. Now they're guilty of treason, okay? I could put them in jail up to 10 years and unlimited fines I can get off these people, okay? And when you pull other people together working this scam, like the sheriff working the scam or the deputy and, the county clerk, and you pull them all together and you put them into one box and you go after these people, you see, they know when the judges on the upper end, they know the true law, what's really going on. And when they know that you know, they're afraid to rule against you. Because, you see, what we do is the last court case, we're in a court case right now, the last one we filed, okay? The judge did all the wrong things. So, okay, that's fine. And we reset our whole system and we put his name, we added him in. We had problems with the clerk, so we suggested that they might want to be added to the club too. And now all of a sudden now they're cooperating with us because we're going to put their name right in here. They're all part of the conspiracy. And once they start to realize what's going on and that they're now going to have to pay out of their own pockets because we're suing them individually. We're going after their paychecks, That's, we're not suing the state. We're not suing the court. We're suing the people that are exercising this scam. And so when you go through that process and you get someone on an appellate court, even if they want to rule against you because they want to say, okay, let's stick with the status quo. You know, they had their chains pulled from someone down below. Hey, fix this for us. And we come up there and we start talking. And they understand that we know the game. The jig is up. And we're gonna take them, we're gonna add them to our case, and we'll go up to the next level. And he doesn't know what the who's gonna next level is gonna get this case, and now they're gonna be judging him, and he's gonna become part of that process, and he could go to jail, and he could lose his paycheck. All of a sudden, you got people starting to cooperate. And when people understand how this system works, we'll work it out of fear. If we can't get the judge to work with us out of patriotism and righteousness and justice, if we can't get that out of them, then we will take it out of fear. And we'll put the fear of God or the fear of the almighty dollar in jail in their hearts. And that's, people need to just understand this. It's simple.
That will happen if there's a critical mass of people that are all yelling the same tune.
Absolutely.
Because it takes
right.
a mob. It truly takes a mob.
Well, that's what's happening here in New York. It's a slow thing, but it's moving. You know, there's quite a few of us down here with Dutchess County and Greene County and Albany County. And now we've got people over on the northern part of the state. We're working with them, and they're off on their own. They're doing something in Erie County and Niagara County. And, you know, we're moving this all over the place. We had something going in Putnam, but that never developed. But we're moving. And once we get it, you know, we're in the 3rd District and the 2nd District. Once we have that there in the 3rd and the 2nd District, all the counties in those districts, they're going to understand real quick. Once we take a town down and we put these people, you know, we throw them in jail for a day or two. I wouldn't put them in jail for no long term, but I'd like to give them all a couple of days in jail, let them know what it feels like. Okay,
yep.
There's one judge who loves to give a year out all the time. I'd love to give that guy a year, but we'll give him a day or two, and we'll take some silver dollars off of them, and we'll take them right out of their paycheck. But we'll scare the shit out of them. We'll bring them right into the process and maybe into the federal courts. Okay, take them out of the state courts. But the thing is once that happens and that news gets out, all the surrounding towns close by, all the people within a certain jurisdiction, you know, certain areas like the 2nd District or the 3rd District, all of a sudden all these judges, they get wind of it. And the next time someone comes into that court and they start talking about the stuff that we're talking about, that's it. They're just going to do the right thing. Why? Out of fear. That's why they're going to do it. You know, as Jefferson said, when the people fear, I think it was Jefferson, when the people fear the government, you have tyranny. When the government fear the people, you have liberty. Well, people, we have to make them fear us. And this is how we make them fear us. You know, I've already had the FBI come down to my house to talk to me because of the things we're doing. And I went through notice and demand with my bank, and that's why they came down on me, I believe. And there's other things we're doing. But I tell you what, you know, they after the interview, they left. They seemed like nice people. They said they were shutting the file on me. And they did say they understood. But it's all because of one word, sovereign. And when he said to me, well, you know, he wrote these papers, and you've got this word sovereign. You belong to that sovereign group, whatever they call that, out west or something. We're supposed to have some group here calling them terrorists, you know. And I said, well, excuse me, I don't know. Have you read the paper? He said, yeah. I said, well, did you take note on who said those words? Because it wasn't mine. I was quoting someone else. Look at the words. It's italicized. It refers to a footnote. It's the Supreme Court. They're the ones calling me sovereign. I'm not calling me sovereign. I'm calling me a people. Okay, I'm one of the people. I don't use the word sovereign straight out. I use their words, and I just quote them. And they say it for me. And they understood that. At least these particular agents understood it. At least they appeared to understand it. And that was it. But this is what they do to you. You know, they call the federal government. They try to have you marked as a terrorist or something. And everything I'm doing is in court and right out in the open and on paper.
That's the same thing with the licensing and the registration. You see, they could say what they want and claim that they entered into a commercial deal with you, but you're the sovereign. And if you hold your jurisdiction, how can they tell the sovereign anything? Because they're created by us. And so, first of all,
wait a minute. You're getting into trouble what you're saying there, though. Because as the sovereign, you have the sovereign right to enter into contract. And so if you enter into a contract and you sign your name to a trustee agreement, like registering your car which is the same as giving it
well,
to
the state.
Well,
that's not true.
I mean, you've just trapped yourself.
No, that's not true. We don't have to worry about that. You see, because I don't have to give them my rights to do something. Let me give you an example. I own a corporation. I'm president of the corporation. I own 100% of the stock. It's my corporation. I'm making all the big bucks. Okay? One day I decide I want to just sweep floors. I'm tired of this rat race. I just want to sweep floors. So the board puts someone in my place to take care of me. You know, I put someone away. And I go down and I start sweeping floors. Okay? That doesn't make, that doesn't take anything away from me because I'm down there sweeping floors. And no one can fire me because I own this company. Well, you see, that's the same thing with this. I'm in a situation. I'm in a pickle, okay? I want to drive without a license, and I want to drive without plates. I should have insurance because they think that's the responsible thing to do, so I'll have that. And that's how I want it, what I want to do. But I'll be living in jail half the time. It doesn't make sense. I can't do it. Okay, well, okay, fine. The last time I renewed my license, I put on, instead of checking New York citizen, I erased all that stuff, okay? And they let it go through. So I'm not a U.S. citizen on my license. But the bottom line is that they're as ignorant as we are. That's the key thing to understand. They keep people so compartmentalized, so dumbed down. Even the people working for them are dumb. They don't even know enough to bring these things up. They don't know, and if they did, they wouldn't know how to produce it, you know?
Well, they do know how to do one thing. They know how to call the bailiff and call the sheriff, have you arrested, and have your property seized. They know how to do that.
They do, and that's why I comply to a certain point, to the point of going to jail. I keep complying right up until I feel like they're going to put me in jail, and I argue them, and then I comply at the point when they're going to put me in jail. But the bottom line is I pursue and push jurisdiction all the time, and that's the key thing. They're not bright enough to win that case. They're not going to win
okay.
that case.
I'm going to tell you something about vehicle ownership and how to do this properly, because there's people in Montana that are doing it, and there are people in Alberta, Canada, that are doing it. And
okay.
here's the bottom line, the 40,000-foot high-water points that you have to cover, okay? First of all, you need to own the manufacturer certificate of manufacture of your car. You don't register your car when you buy it.
Yeah.
You pay for it cash. You get the manufacturer's certificate of manufacture. That's your evidence of ownership, okay?
But most
how the car is yours, not the state's.
But most
second
people
thing.
Can't do that, though. Before you go any further, most people can't do that. A lot of people buy secondhand vehicles. I pay cash for my vehicle. I don't get credit. I don't get a vehicle loans, nothing. I pay cash.
So if
I need
you pay
one,
cash
but
for
I can
your
never
vehicle,
buy a brand
you can
new
get
one.
The manufacturer's certificate of manufacture for it.
You know, I can go spend. I can get a used car. Well, I get a car 2 years old, and I save a lot of money. I don't get them new, and they've already destroyed the certificate of origins there. And
you
so
can
you
go
can't
back and
get
it off the manufacturer. They can issue
okay.
another.
I didn't know.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how they do it.
Oh,
so you get the so follow me through on the process. This is it. If you have the manufacturer certificate of manufacture, you're not driving a vehicle. What you're driving is a personal conveyance device, an automobile. That's what you're driving, and it's your personal property. And what you put on it is your own license plate, personal property of whatever your name is.
Before you
now,
go
the
further.
Second thing you do is you
Before
don't
you
get a
further.
Driver's
Hold
license.
Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. You said automobile. That's interesting. It's not a motor vehicle. I know that's the word they use, and I don't drive a motor vehicle. But automobile is a good word to use?
Sure.
That's interesting, too. Okay, go ahead.
So the automobile is your personal conveyance. You put your evidence of ownership on it, your personal license plate, personal conveyance of Liam Malone, okay? Now you drive it. You don't need a driver's license. When a cop pulls you over, the bottom line is he's a highwayman holding court on the side of the road executing summary judgment when he gives you a ticket. And what is the evidence of that? You need to go to the Court of Appeals to contest it. So court was held at the side of the road by the highwayman. Well, Magna Carta is law in the United States. It was the basis. It was part of the basis of this nation. And under Magna Carta, Article 17, it says right in it that people have the right to convey themselves and or their persons and personal goods on the King's Highway without any financial encumbrance. They have the right to use the highways of the nation. And Magna Carta is law in this land. It's been upheld in courts. So now you have the right to convey your personal conveyance.
As long as you know how to bring that up, yes, you're right.
That's exactly how they're doing it, and perfecting it in the state of Montana and in the state of province of Alberta. They've been doing it for years.
Once you get this certificate of origins, okay, let's say you get that. I'm going to pursue that, as a matter of fact. Now you get that. Now, once you have that, you can take your plates off.
Yes, because it's your vehicle. It's your car.
Now, if I send them the certificate of origins, do they understand that?
Yeah, it's not their property. If you never registered the vehicle with them, then if you did register it with them and you've got the manufacturer's certificate of manufacture, then what you do is you need to file constructive notice notifying them that they have defrauded you, the basis of the fraud, because they've taken the ownership of your vehicle without any financial consideration. And you now understand that you have been defrauded, so you're asserting your sovereign right to reclaim your property that you paid for, and you do have the evidence that you parted with money in order to acquire that car.
I understand that. We do have another problem, though. I understand what you just said, and at that point, if you can get this taken care of in your own state, you'll be put on a list. Do not detain, do not question. So as soon as they run you, they'll let you go. That's fine in your state. The problem
Actually, you can solve that easily. Do you know how you solve that, even going over interstate line? All you do is, as soon as you've been challenged the first time, you take it to court and you win, you're going to have your court records. Now what you do is when a cop pulls you over, when he wants your license, ownership, and registration and proof of insurance, what you're handing him instead is your paperwork showing that you've already beat this in court, and you're informing him that he's wasting his time trying to detain you further. Whether he has knowledge that you're on a list or not, he's going to leave you alone. That's the bottom line,
maybe,
looking at your
maybe
paperwork.
Not. Yeah, maybe or maybe not. You see, I don't know whether I want to look at this a little more. You see, the problem is trying to live that way. I'd love to live that way. Is very difficult.
Right.
And
that's why
I'm willing to go to court and fight these people and resist these people and take my time and keep and just go through that process. And I'm willing that on that battle because you see, I'm making that battle. And I'm going to that court and I'm dealing with it. But if I'm going about my business and I keep getting stopped and getting tickets and going to court and maybe thrown in jail, I just can't be doing that all the time. We all have that problem. As a matter of fact, I think maybe we can sue with a declaratory judgment, not only to have I'll keep my license, my driver's license so I can use it for going out of state, but nevertheless, in my state, or at least while I'm in my state, when they stop me and they see that, it's do not stop and do not detain and do not question. And they're going to leave me alone on every issue, okay? And I'm on my way. Now, I'm happy to pay the 20 or 30 bucks a year or 2 years or whatever it is we pay for these things. I don't mind that for right now. Later on, we have to deal with this. Once we get the political control, we can make changes in many different ways. But until then, I can live with that. I don't mind putting a plate on my car if that's going to keep me out of jail and out of the process. But still, I should have my certificate of origins anyway. And maybe they should make a special plate. We can get that under declaratory judgment that they have to give us a special plate so we don't just get stopped and harassed all the time. And when we do get stopped, we got a paperwork to show them.
Well, they have diplomatic plates, don't they?
Then that's what they're going to have to give us because I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm from out of their town. I'm in New York. So, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, you said it well, though. It boils down to choosing your battles. I mean, I don't see a big enough financial payoff to be worth my while to fight that particular battle. I'm a lot more interested in fighting head-on to get just money in this country, and that really boils down to an education process and taking back control of our electoral process.
I agree, and that's where it all starts, where the rubber meets the road is right there. That's the
I'd
like to end this recording. We'll continue on, but I just want to end this recording formally. So let me do that.